Right. It's either have an abortion or you know, you're on your own. And we offer the real options, which is you can have your baby, you can plan an adoption if that's what you wish, you can raise your child, you can reconcile with your family if that's possible, and you can get individual help to go back to school, to find a job,
wow,
to take those next good steps in your life. And that's what good counsel means. It's to help a woman in a crisis pregnancy to find real hope and healing.
So you're in your 33rd year of this work.
That's correct. That's right. And we've seen more than 7,000, you know, women,
wow,
under our roofs, offering almost 700,000 nights of shelter and support. But it's still, you know, a small part. As you know, every year in this country, we count 1 million surgical abortions. It's such a devastating tragedy. Some years it's been much higher. And nobody's counting. Nobody knows the number of how many babies, how many conceived children are dying because of the so-called contraceptive pill,
right,
which you know really does also cause abortions. Also the so-called morning after pill, which again is killing a child conceived in the womb. Or these Plan B or patches or IUDs or other abortions that occur. Nobody can count those. And it's a grave tragedy, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. But we want to offer real hope. So there's no woman who finds herself pregnant and is rejected by the father of a child that still can't find real concrete help out there. There was a woman down along the Gulf Coast. She was living in a container, you know, one of those box cars that was abandoned in a junkyard. I mean, this is unbelievable, Brian. The father of a child didn't want anything to do with her once he found out that she was pregnant. She had no other family to rely on. And when she was calling homeless shelters, because she was pregnant, they didn't want to take her in, or they said they were full. She couldn't even get into a domestic violence shelter because they didn't have room. But as soon as she called us, which happened to be late one night, it was almost midnight, one of our staff got in a car, had to drive 2 hours to pick her up and then bring her to our home. And I can't tell you how grateful she was and how grateful we are, because no mother should be living, you know, even on the Gulf Coast this past winter, it was cold down there. Oh. It went to freezing overnight, and she had no electricity, no running water. I mean, it was just incredible.
Did she have a child in the womb?
Yes. Yes, she was pregnant.
Is the child still in the womb, or has the child been delivered?
No, she's, I think, like within a month now of giving birth. And so far, the doctors say, you know, she's doing okay. She's doing okay.
Well,
but
you know,
I know you'll pray for this little baby and for this mom.
We will. We'll ask our listeners to pray as well. But, it makes you wonder what God has in store for this child, that the mother would have been reached under such dire circumstances, and that there would be one of these homes down there where they don't exist, really, and that the woman could have found shelter at exactly the right moment, and the child will be born under a doctor's supervision. I mean, what a story that child has.
Yeah, thank God. Thank God. Boy, you're so right. There was here's another interesting one where I could tell you kind of how it ended. This mother was from Poland, and she was a live-in nanny. And this isn't the first time I've seen this situation. But she got pregnant. She was taken advantage of by someone in the family. And, of course, they didn't want to deal with her or her problem. So they not only kicked her out, she also lost her job. So here she is in a foreign country, you know, pregnant with a baby, that she thought by somebody she thought loved her. And she came to live in our home up in Spring Valley. Well, in Rockland County, there's a rather large Hasidic community.
Oh.
And this young woman was a seamstress. She really had a great talent with sewing. And she found work by doing the kinds of knitting and sewing, the dresses and the mm-hmm. pants that the Hasidic community liked. And I have to tell you, they may not have paid her a lot, but they certainly paid her, and she worked very hard. And her son, Robercheck, I could tell you, was born very healthfully. And she was always kind of a joyful woman, but very serious. Well, we had a barbecue in our Spring Valley home a couple of years ago. And I haven't seen this mom. She was with us a little more than a year, because we tell women they could stay with us for a year, and then they, you know, look to move out on their own. And then out of nowhere, she came up to me and says, "Chris, I'm legal," because she had gotten her citizenship. She applied and waited and did what she needed to do.
Wow.
She got her son through Catholic schools. Now, this is over 20 years later. He graduated, went to college. She was in college at the time that she came up to me. And I was thinking, even when he was born, the thought went through my mind, her little Robercheck someday is going to be a doctor. He'll probably be taking care of me in my old age. And that may very well be the case. We'll see if he goes on to medical school.
Bread cast upon the waters. I have to ask you this question. When you have seven different homes spread out as they are, including one in Alabama on the Panhandle, how do you manage that? How do you, you know, keep an eye on things and solve problems on site and so forth? How do you do that?
Well, obviously, it's not just me. I've got very good people, mostly women who are in the homes, who are overseeing it day to day. And we tell our staff, you know, if you have a 40-hour work week, you could take an hour to pray. That we want you to take time to pray, because we know it's only with God's help that we can do any good. And the chapel is there. I mean, some people like to, you know, go out for a walk or open their Bible at their desk or pray before they come into work. But it's just a lot of very good people working together. And I have to tell you, Brian, that you don't have to be a social worker or a nurse or even a teacher, for that matter, to do the kind of work that we need in the homes. You have to have a heart that certainly loves the Lord and loves his mothers and babies in need. And we've had people whose background has been, you know, in some strange professions. Of course, some have been housewives most of their life, and that's fine. Some have been engineers.
How about that?
Some have been in advertising.
Oh, heaven forbid.
They just make great staff, because it's not what your resume says or where you studied. It's really what's in your heart and in your soul. We have one house mom. She was in the reserves, and she was on active duty for several years before coming to work for us. So, you know, it's a calling, and it's that kind of calling that allows me to be able to entrust the mothers who are calling us in need to the good women who are in the good council homes.
So you don't need day-to-day contact with the women managing the homes, but I'm guessing occasionally, once a month or every 2 weeks or something, you touch base and make sure that everything's working fine?
Oh, yeah. So Sandra Jones, who I consider my right hand, she got her master's degree in social work while she was working with us. And she just had a real heart. She came to work part-time in the daycare, and now it's been her life's work. She's in touch with the homes almost on a daily basis. I mean, if there's it's really rare that something's not happening in one of the homes, but if she's not in touch on a daily basis, every week she's reviewing who's there and what's going on, and she and I talk frequently. so we all know what's happening. You know, every time we say, you know, we think we've seen it all, there's something new that may happen. And given not only technology, how that's changed our lives and the lives of even those women in need, also there, you know, the problems have grown. We've had women who have been involved in human trafficking. And that you might move one from one state to another to make sure that they are protected and they are well. But it's devastating today to think of how our society and, you know, people around us are mistreating our brothers and sisters.
Isn't
and
it something
especially
that
our young women.
This whole canard, it's always the big lie. Always. Always.
Yeah.
This is for women. This is the liberation of women. This is about, you know, the woman coming into her own in our time and getting all due respect and deference. And yet, just what Paul the Sixth said in Humanae Vitae, just they'll be objectified, you know, and the government will impose, you know, certain restrictions and order certain other things. And in the end, the women will be the losers, but all of us will be impoverished by this. And look at what had happened. It led to abortion, which, of course, is what, you know, you're ministering to. Just awful, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, absolutely prophetic were his words. But when you think about what Humanae Vitae said, it's just a logical consequence. Once you remove the beautiful, God-given conjugal act from marriage, once you condone that it's okay to have a conjugal act that is free of children or attempting to be free of children, then you devalue the man and the woman, and then you devalue their relationships, and you certainly devalue children. And we've gone from, you know, free reigns with contraception to rampant abortion, to, you know, people wonder about school shootings and the Me Too movement. All of this comes out of a great disrespect for life. And again, Brian, you know, this is something you and I know, probably most of your listeners know. But if it doesn't resonate with them now, if they can't see it, it doesn't take a lot of meditation to understand. When you say that the child in the womb has no value, when the laws of your land protect an abortionist who will go and kill that child in the womb, then where is there any value at all? You know, and I heard someone say this last week, that teenagers are thinking, if that baby has no value, I don't have any value. And if I don't have any value as a human being, as a person, then you don't have any value.
Yeah.
So for me to take your life, it doesn't matter. We have no value. It doesn't add up to anything. When you go in the other direction and say that every person has value from their first moment of conception, and you're made in the image and likeness of God, well, then everything takes on a new perspective. I mean, it's new today to this country, but it used to be a given for cultures for millennia that, of course, every person's life is made in God's image and likeness, has to be protected, nourished, and given, you know, it's automatically given rights and responsibilities.
Either or.
And we see so many of our moms, they, you know, don't conceive of themselves as having any worth. And although they would like to be married, almost every one of them, they don't have hope that they can find someone who would respect them as a woman and love them and honor them and cherish them all the days of their life. And when I think about the Me Too movement, that appropriately is having women stand up and say, you know, these men, regardless of their title or their authority or their reputation, These men have been abusive. Well, they certainly should be called out, and they certainly should lose the support that they've garnered from public opinion or from their celebrity status. But then in the last few weeks, I've been going around New York, you know, as I go in and out of the city. You ride the trains, and you look at the marquees. You look at advertisements. I didn't even want to name the lingerie company, whose advertisements are noted for being pornographic. But they're all out there. They're still there today. And I'm looking around, and I'm thinking, this is what's causing the Me Too movement to happen. The reason that the reason we're having this reaction is because for, you know, the last 50 years, there's been no restraint. There's been no one saying that women should be respected and honored in the public place, in advertising, on TV, in the movies, in our stories that we tell each other, on the radio. What we hear from the term shock jock came because of the kinds of impurities that they were given.
It's so very, very true. And, you know, Mary Eberstadt, who works at one of the faith institutes, I forget, she gave a lecture out at Steubenville in January. And she talked about, you know, the ironies of the women's movement and how it has led to this Me Too movement. And one of the things that she pointed out is that, you know, this was supposed to liberate women, the pill was, but it ended up liberating men. That women, when they made the physical choice to have the child, they allowed the father, that enabled the father, rather, to make a social choice. And the stigma's been removed from the father. So the father can look at the woman and say, hey, you didn't protect yourself. You're not willing to have an abortion. Hey, that child's on you. That's you. And walk away from it without stigma.
Absolutely. And it's horrible. And the women that we see at Good Counsel, and by the way, I want to mention, if anybody knows a woman in a crisis pregnancy, they could go to our website, goodcounselhomes.org, and that's counsel, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, homes with an S at the end of it, or call our national helpline, which is 1-800-723-8331. The women, you know, coming to Good Counsel, they're the ones who are left alone. They're ashamed, but they're also, they don't want to blame the father for his irresponsible behavior. You know, of course, you know, they may be, not in every case, but in many cases, they're equally responsible, but they're also unwilling to say, well, the father has responsibility. They let him go. They're afraid to denounce him to the authorities or to have people, you know, collect from him because legally, he owes child support. And I think part of the reason the mothers don't want to go down that road is they were so disgusted in how they were treated, mistreated, I should say, because maybe they really believed these men when they said they were in love, that they don't want to have anything to do with him. And they don't want to even get support from him. They'd rather be free of that relationship. But how sad that this is where we've come to. And as you pointed out, it started in part with the feminist movement, which in part was also supported by men who had little or no respect for women. And today, you know, now we have to reclaim that ground and continue to build up really what is a culture of respect and of love. And what I've heard on some liberal radio stations particularly is that women who certainly claim to be feminist start talking about being virtuous, and that maybe, you know, maybe what their mother told them about not going to a hotel room with a man alone is probably a good thing. And I'm thinking, well, this is one way God is going to bring some good out of all the trauma and the pain that so many women have faced and the abuse that they've taken. And I think it's certainly starting to frighten a lot of men. But, Brian, the women that we see at Good Counsel, they still have not had their Me Too movement yet because they are even poorer than a lot of the celebrities who are calling out these men. And if they're taken advantage of in their jobs, sometimes they still are still afraid to go to the authorities, and they don't have the support, you know, of the media, and they are still, you know, taking the consequences. They ultimately love their children. I mean, every mother coming to Good Counsel is a woman who's willing to risk everything to give birth to her child. And often she's losing the support of family and friends. And I remember one mom whose own mother literally flew around the world a lot. But when she became pregnant, her mother was embarrassed. So she came into our home, and it was Mother's Day, and she thought she was going to go home to visit her mother, who didn't live too far away. But when she called, she was told that her mom was really kind of busy. She had other family members over. And what that really translated into was, I'm still embarrassed that you have a baby and that I don't want you around. So even in this day and age, shame and embarrassment still exist.
There is some stigma.
You know, again, who is there to try to help and pick up the pieces and to heal and make women whole? It's those who believe. And we believe because of Jesus Christ, and we know that Jesus forgives all of our sins, and that if we go to him asking for his mercy, he is infinitely merciful.
Beautiful. Chris, can you hang with us?
That's the message that we want to tell everybody.
It is. Can you hang with us through a couple commercials? Got some other things we wanted to ask you. Talk about these ladies. What happens to them once they leave your safe homes? I want to remind our listeners that this program, along with all the programs this month, has been brought to you by Regina Academies. And I think we can safely say there's a great movement afoot in American education, and it's called classical education, something that maybe we lost 90 years ago. We seem to lose interest in. You might call it a back-to-the-future development that has caught the educational community by surprise. And according to many professional educators, it's beginning to have a reforming influence on traditional public schools, even private schools. And the movement's being led by parents who have become increasingly dissatisfied with the quality of the education their children are receiving, mostly in public schools. And given a chance and a choice, these parents are voting with their feet. And in Philadelphia, the name of that choice is the Regina Academies. There are over 400 children from over 200 families in 5 different Regina Academies, and they're now receiving the very same education that our nation's founders received over 250 years ago. The same rigorous concentration, math, science, language, and the arts, the same joyful pursuit of excellence in mind and body, the same proven tools for a lifetime of learning. One difference: our children are being prepared to be leaders of the coming new springtime in the Catholic Church. So for more information, please consult and look at, take a visit to the website, reginaacademies.com. That's reginaacademies.com. And if you like, by the way, if you like what you see, please come and visit us.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We often think of the scripture where the disciples were walking to Emmaus, where they said, "Were not our hearts burning within us as Jesus spoke to us on the road?" as we travel along the road together in our Archdiocese of Philadelphia and Camden Diocese. We thank God for our loyal circle of family and friends. Please consider sponsoring one of our new programs in the name of your parish priest, family member, or friend. It would be a beautiful way of helping us to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ, our risen Lord. Give us a call at 610-527-2906 or visit us on the web at inhissign.com.
Hi, this is Our Recourse. I'm Brian Gale. You're back, as we are, with Chris Bell, the Executive Director of Good Counsel Homes. We're talking about the wonderful work that Chris and his team do to minister to these women who have just found themselves in really, really desperate situations, sometimes dramatically so, and how these beautiful homes and the wonderful ladies, in some cases men, who attend to them while they're there, and allow them to be safe and to have proper nutrition and all the rest of those good things that are important so that the baby can be healthy and then to be able to deliver a baby that is safe. All of those things are being done by Good Counsel Homes and Chris Bell and his team. And Chris, the question for me is, what happens? I'm sure our listeners are wondering too. What happens to these ladies? You've mentioned about 7,000 over the past 33 years. What happens once they deliver the child and they leave the home?
When they leave, they not all the time do they tell us where they're going. Remember, we're dealing with some women who have grown up in very difficult circumstances. Some have lived their whole life in foster care. Many have been abused. So I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say that, you know, the majority are moving out with a job in their own apartment. But those that we do stay in touch with, that's what they're doing. And last year, it was almost half. Half the women who came to us had a job and moved into their own place, sometimes with friend, not with a boyfriend, because we wouldn't, you know, count that as a successful move out. We had some interesting experiences in the past year. One college-age girl who wanted to do an internship in the Bronx with babies came to our daycare. And she's from upstate New York. And when she called her mom to tell her where she was and what she was doing and how much she enjoyed it, her mother said, I didn't tell you before, but that's where you were born.
Wow. Oh, my word.
And this girl was such a delight. And the mother was so happy and thrilled that her daughter found good counsel in the Bronx. That, and for us, I mean, the staff were astounded. I mean, everybody's jaw dropped. And the second mom who I helped here in New Jersey, after we first opened up, she went on to get married. She had other children. And one of her granddaughters, I think it's her oldest granddaughter, got a full scholarship to a local Catholic university. And I didn't know that I'd live to see the day. But Father Benedict, who said to me, you know, from his experience working with prison chaplains, who told him, to make a good man, you have to start with his grandfather, or maybe his great-grandfather.
How about that?
And Father Benedict looked at me one day and said, Chris, you're working with grandmothers and great-grandmothers, and the work that you do now, you may not see immediate results. In fact, you're not going to see many immediate results. But in time, with the help of God, you know, something that was done here will bear fruit and help someone down the line, you know, a grandchild or great-grandchild. So so I've lived to see the day. it's quite astounding. We've had few mothers get married, but one of them who did moved out to California, and she wrote me back some years ago to say that she also had other children and she needed the baptismal certificate for her first daughter, who was baptized here in New Jersey. So, you know, it's these vignettes that really give tremendous encouragement to me and to the staff, because not every day, you know, do you get thanked. I think of Jesus with the 10 lepers. You know, if you have one come back, you're really doing pretty good. One out of 10. So
you have a lot of women, I'm sure, leaving. They're grateful, but maybe don't know how to express it. Maybe they're fearful. They don't know how to, you know, they're afraid to try to express it.
Yeah, well, one of the things at Good Counsel, we ask the moms to have dinner together, right? That's one of the mandatory requirements, that one or two moms will cook dinner for everybody else. And what I found out early on is that it's frightening, because too many young women have never sat down at a dinner table before. And it was frightening to sit across from somebody and eat and have a conversation and share about the day. I mean, it's just hard. So,
wow, that is special.
So, you know, you realize what happens with family life. You talk about transitions. You reminded me of that, because when you say they don't know how to say goodbye, it's like they don't know how to move on in a happy and a polite and a, you know, I mean, it may be sad, but you also know you're going on to something, you hope better, something else. But when you haven't learned that, you know, how to say goodbye and even stay in touch, then it's hard. You run out, you scream, or you just don't say goodbye at all. You just leave. So, yeah, it's hard. What we learn in families, Brian, you know, we take it, you know, maybe you don't. I've taken for granted, you know, what it's like to grow up with parents. My parents were married longer than 66 years before they both went home to God.
Oh.
And, you know, I always had mom at home, and dad was working, and he did all he could to, you know, to go to my football games and to, you know, see me when I was wrestling in high school and, you know, in college, he'd come up to visit. But when you have a mom and father, lose a sense, I think, of self, not only what it is to be in a family, but you lose a sense of who am I? And so at Good Counsel, we're trying to put some of those pieces back together again. Hence, you eat dinner together, you clean up together, you know, you do, you know, heavy cleaning on the weekends together, you pray together. You know, we invite the mothers to pray. We don't force them to pray, except grace. You know, when they sit around dinner, it's like somebody's got to say grace. So, and that usually works out for them.
Chris, what roughly, ballpark, what's it cost a year to keep one of these homes open?
So, it's going to astound you, because people think, you know, what does it cost for me to run my home, my family? You know, I do it on, you know, my salary, or maybe my combined salary with my wife. But we're talking at least between 8 to 12 families, right, single-parent families in a home.
Yeah.
We have to pay staff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, it's not like the husband and wife get extra pay for being at home watching the kids. Plus, we offer the moms free daycare so they can go back to school. It's free to them. It costs us about $100 a week to give a mom daycare so she could work sometimes late into the night or on weekends. But the cost of a home, a single home, is over $500,000 a year.
Oh, my word. Yeah. My word. So you need roughly $350,000 to keep this whole thing going each and every year.
Well, and then you add on that, we have a post-abortion healing program, which is a national program, because we also want to say, not only to everybody listening, but if you go on Facebook, we have Good Counsel Homes on Facebook, and again on our website, which is Good Counsel, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, Holmes with an S at the end of it, goodcounselholmes.org. You'll find our post-abortion healing program called Lumina, because the other message, obviously, we want to share, not only with the mothers of Good Counsel, but with women and men, and even the siblings of those who have had abortion in their families, is that Jesus Christ can forgive, and he does forgive, and he can bring good even out of the horror of an abortion. And so our Lumina post-abortion healing program is another addition to our work. We have a national helpline, our intake office. Anybody, I'm sure, within the sound of our voices, and I guess if they're online, they could be listening in any state in the union, they can call 1-800-723-8331. That's Good Counsel's national helpline, 1-800-723-8331. And we will help any woman in a crisis pregnancy, even if she's in Nebraska or California or Oregon or Texas, or certainly in Pennsylvania or New York or New Jersey or Alabama. We'll help her. If she can't get to a Good Counsel home, we'll find a pro-life home that will help and assist her through her crisis. And on top of that, we also have our Exodus follow-up program. So when mothers do move out, we do try to follow them for a few months or a year and try to act as a big sister where they would need help as they make that transition from Good Counsel, you know, to the next step in their life. So that's where all that comes. So it's a little more, actually, than $3.5 million a year. And it's that number grows because people need to work and they need to live.
So how are you able to raise $3.5 or $4 or close to, you know, $5 million a year? How do you do that?
Right. Well, that's why I'm really grateful that you have me on the show today, Brian, so that people who are listening, I hope that some of them, hope all of them would be consider being generous and helpful, not only to pray for us, but if you can go on to goodcounselholmes.org, that's counsel again, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, Holmes with an S at the end of it, .org, or you can go on Facebook and find our website. You can make a donation. You can make a donation today. If you want to mail in a check, I'll give you the address. It's still Good Counsel, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, and it's at P.O. Box 6068. That's 6068 in Hoboken, H-O-B-O-K-E-N, Hoboken, New Jersey, 07030. And Good Counsel is a nonprofit charity. So your check is tax deductible. You can make a credit card donation that is tax deductible. You can call up our hotline to find out more about us as well. And again, that's 1-800-723-8331. And I'm really glad, Brian, that you asked that question. I'm sure there are generous people out there, and no gift is too small, and certainly no gift really is too large, because we'll put it to good use to feed babies, to help mothers go back to school and find jobs, and to protect those who are abandoned by the fathers of their children and their own families.
Well, this is Matthew 25 territory for all our listeners, myself included. You know, we're talking about, you know, Christ famously said, you know, when you feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, clothe the naked, you know, help comfort the sick and afflicted, visit those in prison. To the degree you do that, you're doing it for me. To the degree you do it to the least of your brethren and our brethren, you do it for me. So people that are making a contribution, whether it's our listeners or anybody else that's doing it, to work like this, and Good Counsel Homes in particular, are really living the gospel, and they are living the heart and soul of the gospel, And in fact, they're doing it at a very critical time because this is Lent, and we know that the first order of the day in Lent is not so much the fasting in and of itself, it's the almsgiving in association with fasting.
That's absolutely a great way to look at it, and it's how we treat those who are most in need that makes the difference, and that's the kind of penance or sacrifice that I think our Lord wants most, isn't it?
It is. You know, we were talking earlier about division in the country, and, you know, there's it just seems as though every news cycle carries with it another outrage, moral outrage, and immediately the walls go up and there's this great gulf in between. You know, we are obviously a bitterly divided nation, and increasingly so. And it occurred to me, I'd like to run this by you, that the separation of the unitive and procreative purposes of the conjugal act, what you talked about a little bit in the first segment, just the separation of the act and the openness to having children, to procreating, has led to a separation of the couple itself, and led ultimately to a separation of the child from the mother in her womb and her father, wherever he may be. And ultimately, that separation has calcified into a divide. And that is the source of our great angst in the country today. The separation of the conjugal act and its purposes have led to the separation of the unity of the country.
That's an incredible, I think, deep and profound insight, Brian, because it does start where the family starts, and that's with a husband and wife. And if a husband and wife cannot be open to complete love of one another, and that wild abandonment of being open to new life, if I become so selfish that I don't want another child or any children to come from my union with my beloved, how can I go on and love my neighbor as myself? How can I go on and love my country? How can I go on and want to love the world around me? Because it's really a deceit of the devil, you know, that I can be more selfish and also better, right?
Yeah, right.
I don't become better by building myself up or withholding my time and talent from others. I become more inward thinking and inward looking and maybe defensive. But if I open myself up to life and to following God's will and to loving my spouse, you know, without any, to have the children that God allows me to have, then how could I not want to be more open in loving my neighbor and my country and the world? Because I see them more as my brothers and sisters, as part of me, as part of God's image and likeness in and around me. And again, you'd think this is almost common sense, but we are living in a darkness, even in this great nation of ours.
Right.
You know, we have the best health care in human history. We have the best technology that has ever been created. We have an incredibly high standard of living even now, yet we're afraid of a child in the womb,
right,
and we're willing to defend the abortionist, to defend him and allow him to continue the slaughter of innocent children in this nation. It's such a contradiction, and I don't think it's being, you know, a doomsayer to say a country cannot last, certainly not last long, on this kind of road. We're killing ourselves from within. And I'm not saying God is going to send down fire and brimstone. I think we're going to do it to ourselves in becoming more selfish and less open in love and mercy and forgiveness to one another.
Well, forgiveness, so the first words of the gospel this morning, stop judging. And of course, because we judge, we condemn. Very hard work when you're in the trenches on this issue and with actual people involved and who are the victims of this. And when you see those people that you've talked about, Chris, who are victimizing them, whether it's sex trafficking or men who are impregnating these ladies and then leaving them, abandoning them, and giving them a hard time, forcing them to have abortions, and then leaving them anyway, whatever it is, we are not to judge, and we are to be altogether forgiving. I don't know about you, but I find that that line, you know, speaking truth to power and calling evil by what it is, but yet avoiding anything that would be judgmental of another human being and his or her motives, I find that to be the work, the greatest work of the spiritual life.
Oh, I think that's great. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
And we see people who are able to do it. You and I both know people who are able to do it. They're able to get involved to the degree that, you know, you are and others. And somehow, I don't know whether it's their prayer life, their equanimity, whether it's their, you know, personality, the way they were raised, the grace, obviously. But for some reason, they're able to draw the line and separate the two and not condemn and always forgive. And I marvel at those people. I can say, you know, I think of myself in terms of a spiritual pygmy, and I think of them as giants.
Well, I certainly don't think of you as a spiritual pygmy, Brian, but that's true humility. You're reminding me of one of, I'll say, one of our brothers, Michael Rourke. And
yes.
And he has a powerful story that I'd like to share, and I don't think he'd mind me sharing it at all because he shared it publicly. Him and his dear wife, AC, for 19 years desired to have many children, and God did not bless them that way. And they made a pilgrimage to Lourdes, and they come back, and they have a son. I mean, it's truly miraculous in every good sense. And
what a son. That young man, Connor, is in New York working as we speak. He's probably 25 years old, and he's made his parents proud.
yeah, that's right. That's right. And Michael and AC, they come back, and within that year or so, after having their first child, now, you would think they would just be so happy, so thrilled, that they would just, you know, completely just surround themselves with that life of that their wonderful son, as you say, making it, he's now in New York and working hard, making them proud. But they hear a message of women in need, like we're talking about today, homeless, pregnant women who have no place to go.
Yeah.
And Michael doesn't only, you know, stand up and say, I'm going to help. He dedicates the rest of his life. He's still involved.
Malta House.
Opening a home. Yeah. And he helped, good counsel, open a home in Connecticut.
Wow. That's
the Connecticut home we're talking about.
Wow.
And good counsel in Norwalk. And it's because of Michael Rourke and other people. Michael wasn't alone, but he continues to do all he can to keep that home open and funded. And it, there's nobody he won't speak to about it, as you well know. And there's, you know, there's a case of being open to God's grace and his love. And when you get a gift, you just share it all the more. And
gratitude.
Involve yourself all the more. And he's inspired me, I can't tell you how many times, with all that he does and the way he does it. And great joy and great love.
Well, yeah, he's got a great personality. He comes from a great family. We grew up with him. We grew up in upper middle class Jewish neighborhood, and any time there were problems in the neighborhood and the poor Jewish people would complain, we Gales would blame the O'Rourkes would blame the Gales. And by the way, we were every other time we were right. But his brother John is one. His brother John is one of our knights, and he's an outstanding man. And he's just involved in so many good works. The whole family is terrific. The matriarch is now maybe, I don't know, 95, something like that, and still sharp. His mom.
Well, she knows she had a little coronary issue very recently, so we got to pray for her, and we can lift her up with everybody on the line here to lift up Helen O'Rourke.
Helen, yeah.
O'Rourke, who is 90.
Yeah, just a great, great lady, and you know, she raised that family. To your point, with all the values that these kids have lived, so Michael doing what he's doing for these women and these unborn children is a direct outgrowth of what he learned at that dinner table.
Wow! Well, and I didn't know you were in the same neighborhood. That's another wonderful.
Well, we don't like to admit it. In fact, most of us Gales, we don't really even admit we know the O'Rourkes. But then they don't admit that they know us either. And so
we
don't take it personally. We have only a minute or two, but I just want to ask, Chris, you have an amazing family. Amazing. Would you please just tell our listeners how many children you have and how many you've adopted?
Well, because Joan and I married late in life, we didn't know if we'd have any children. We talked about adoption, and I would say this to any young couple or any engaged couple, even before you're married, discuss the possibility of adoption. Because if you can have many children, God still may want you to have others, because there are many children out there who need to be adopted. So Joan and I did, and we concluded we would be open to special needs kids. And we really didn't know what that meant. But God blessed us with our first child by birth, by our first wedding anniversary. Actually, a month before we celebrate our first wedding anniversary, Mary Louise was born. And then, because we didn't see any other kids coming, we adopted six other children, five of whom have different special needs. And we just feel very blessed. Actually, I don't know if they have special needs, but they're very special to us. Maybe it's their parents who really have the special needs. And we're really blessed.
Well, one of them is one of my favorite people in all the world, Emilio. And please tell him.
Emiliano. He comes from Mexico. He was born with arthrogryposis, which means his arms and legs are stiff. But he has a great heart, as you know, Brian. And you're really very kind to him, and he loves you and loves being around the Knights. I just want to put out there one more time for anybody who's listening, who wants more information, who wants to be in touch, who wants to support, to go to our website, goodcounselhomes.org. That's C-O-U-N-S-E-L, homes with the S at the end of it, .org, for information and for a donation. You can go on YouTube to our YouTube channel, Good Counsel Homes. You can go on Facebook and like us, Good Counsel Homes. And our hotline is 1-800-723-8331 for any woman in a crisis pregnancy. And if you want to mail in a donation to our nonprofit tax-exempt organization, that's Good Counsel, P.O. Box 6068, Hoboken, New Jersey, 07030.
Final word. Thank you, Chris, for being with us. Great work you're doing, and please know we'll be keeping you and that wonderful team and family of yours in our prayers.
I really appreciate it, Brian. God bless you. Thank you. You